What do women read about when they read about orgasms? It's that moment of climax and release that eludes so many women. Some women fake it, and some simply do without it. Some women have multiple orgasms, they say anyway. But today on Radio Gorgeous, we've got someone on who's going to break some myths about your sex life and help you get more natural orgasms and to begin to really talk to your body. I'm here with US-born Betsy Blankenbaker, filmmaker, Koira teacher, and now author who has written her book, Autobiography of an Orgasm. So hi, Betsy, a warm welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you, Josephine. It's great to be here with you.
So why is this a book that we should not expect what we think the cover says?
That's a good question. It's definitely a provocative title, and I actually kind of stole the title from the famous book Autobiography of a Yogi, which was a famous kind of rite of spiritual passage. And I felt that my book is about my spiritual passage through rediscovering myself and healing my body through orgasm. But when people first hear the title, they think it's going to be erotica, and it's something very playful, and it is part that, but it's also part very serious memoir of healing my body after sexual assault.
Yeah, should we go back in time to your first sexual assault?
So when I was six, I was molested by a teenage neighbor in my childhood bedroom.
And she was a girl.
She was a girl. And the interesting thing is, looking back now, I don't think she meant to harm me. I think she was probably molested too. But the thing is, we don't talk about these things. And there's one in three women in the world would have experienced some sort of sexual assault in their lifetime, more than half before the age of 18.
Okay, can you just explain what she did to you and how old you were?
I was six, and she asked me to play doctor. She was 14, and I didn't know what doctor was. And she told me to remove my clothes. She told me to remove my shorts, and she molested me with her fingers.
It hurt?
At first, what was interesting, because she was just massaging my body, you know, it felt good. And then there was the moment that it didn't feel good, and I literally shut my legs, and I just remember freezing. And the thing is, that memory stayed with me for pretty much the next 40 years, and because I never dealt with it. That was the first time, and then I seem to have, it happened again, you know, with neighborhood boys when I was 8, and again at 10 and 16. And as we're seeing now, many women are saying me too, because we experience these things and we don't talk about them and they stay in our body. And, you know, finally after 40 years, I started to look at myself and, you know, why my marriage had failed, why I didn't feel good in my body. And I couldn't keep blaming everybody else. And I literally took myself on as a research project to see if I could feel my orgasm and feel good in my body after not feeling good for 40 years.
So what was the first step you took, which must have been one of the scariest steps?
Well, one of the first things I did, and it was funny because this coincided with taking my oldest son to school. He chose to go to college in New York City. And so I signed up for a course that was focused on bodies and orgasm. And I loved that it was in New York, because nobody would know me there. I was from Indiana. And you know, so I would drop my son off at school and then go do these courses. And one of the first things that I was asked to do was to look at my vagina, vulva. And I had never in my, I mean, I was 40 at the time, 44 years old, I think, and I had never looked at myself. And, you know, it's almost like I made a date with myself in my hotel room to discover, you know, what I looked like. And
how scary was that?
Very scary. I was scared to be intimate with myself. It was like I was scared to get to third base with myself. And you know, only because my body had held so much trauma, and just because I was finally acknowledging it, it didn't mean it was easy. It was really uncomfortable. And there was a lot of shame that came up around that too. So it was just like, you know, I gave myself a year just to be gentle with myself, just to be gentle with myself, because I had been judgmental for 40 years.
So what did you see when you looked in the mirror?
Wow, I was surprised. I had never seen a woman's genitals before, including mine. I had seen some in magazines like Playboy and Penthouse. And I was surprised. It was, you know, I looked really beautiful, and I felt like it looked a lot like the Virgin Mary, a statue of the Virgin Mary. Wow. Yeah. And
so it's a strangely quite religious experience.
It was religious in the way of where there's space for a woman in religion, because, you know, in the religions I've grown up with, I don't see many women in those, you know, leadership roles, but the Virgin Mary, the idea of an image of the Virgin Mary between my legs, even though I wasn't very religious, made me feel a little bit more sacred about my body moving forward.
Okay, so do you think that's one of the things that you hadn't really respected or deeply loved your body?
Absolutely, absolutely. And also, we live in a culture where, you know, from a young age, you hear jokes about women's vaginas don't smell good, or somebody had said to me, I was, you know, when I was 49, I was out with some friends in Cape Town, and the men joke that nobody wants to sleep with 50-year-old pussy. They didn't realize I was 49 at the time. And, you know, I like joked along with them because I didn't want to reveal myself. But we live in a culture that just doesn't, you know, men are very proud of their penises, their cocks.
Well, they pretend to be.
Yeah, they pretend to be. Yeah. But yeah, we're not, I mean, for me, it was great to feel really holy and reverent about myself for the first time.
I'm really looking at your lipstick colour. It's like a kind of dark berry colour. And I'm wondering whether that's the colour that your vagina is.
It's part of it is, and then part of it's like the palest pink, like a seashell pink.
Where's the pale pink? Can you explain? Because I'm going to... Will you dare me to look at mine? Because I did admit in another podcast I've never done it, and I still... Will you give me encouragement?
I dare every woman to get to third base with themselves, you know, Okay. Literally. Like, yeah. And for me, I really did, you know, plan a date with myself. And
what's that? Have a bath, get a mirror.
Exactly.
Put on the lights low.
Yeah.
Might need a torch now. I'm 54.
You have to get your reading glasses out. No, but it's just like, it's just changing the way we feel about our bodies.
Tell me about your vagina, what it looks like. Come on.
Oh, gosh. So the lips are...
Is that the outside? Like, can you explain? Yeah. So the outside...
The outside, yeah. So the outside lips are this, you know, deeper shade of like a wine shade on me.
So your lips, like your lipstick.
Yeah. And then when they open, it's just that like, it looks like this seashell pink. Mm. And what was also interesting for me is I'd heard all these years that it was so hard to find the clit, and really it's not. This is one of those things that we grow up with. This is hard to find.
Men can never find the clit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but it's also like we need to know our bodies. And the great thing about all the research that I did was I took myself to places that a lover has never taken me to. And then I took myself even beyond that. So it was me really knowing my body. And even with, we're talking about the first book today, Autobiography of an Orgasm. The next book that's coming out is called Beyond O. And I spent 1 year as just being with myself, no partners, no toys, no research, no sex experts. And as just a way to be the expert on my body, because I had so many women write to me after they read the book Autobiography of an Orgasm saying, well, good for you, but it's too late for me. I'm too old, or I can't afford to go take courses, or I don't have a partner to experiment with. And I didn't want that to be a reason for a woman not to know her body and not to feel the... and nurture the sensual energy in her body. And especially women that are... maybe experiencing menopause or of a certain age, we're just told that, you know, it's over for you. When actually, after your body is not focusing on reproduction, it instead is focused on self-cultivation, and it actually is the juiciest time of life. So, and what was interesting for me after that year of just being with myself And every day I dedicated 45 minutes to just listening to my body and honoring my sensual energy. I called them my bliss sessions. After that year, I was feeling so good that I've extended it for 2 more years because I was like, I'm really enjoying, you know, being with myself and knowing my body. And it also turned out to be the most sensual year of my life, the most creative, and the healthiest. And so it's interesting, you know, we forget that the same feel-good chemicals and hormones that are released during orgasm are also chemicals that lead to vitality and wellness.
Fantastic. So, right, so you found your clitoris, and can you explain where the clitoris is? I'm always coming back to this, aren't I?
That's great. So if you, for me, the very first thing I did was I put a finger just at the bottom of the opening of where the bottom of the vulva is. Mm-hmm. The exterior is called the vulva, mm-hmm. interior vagina. And I put my finger at the bottom, and then I just slowly slid it all the way up until you feel a bump. And that's your clitoris. And for some, when I first felt it, it was literally like, felt like I was, like shards of glass were coming off it when I stroked it. And this can happen when women have experienced abuse because you're holding it in your body in different ways. And I can remember thinking, okay, if this is what it feels like, I don't want to know what it, you know, what it is. But I just committed to 15 minutes a day stroking it so soft, and then even softer. And
with lube or without lube?
With a little bit of lube.
Yeah.
And just, but it's just, you go soft and then you go even softer. And that was our fingertips have, other than our genitals, have the highest percentage of nerve endings in our body. So if you're putting pressure, like we're used to putting pressure with our vibrators, which are lovely, but they also can decrease sensitivity, and you're also not getting the sensitivity from your fingers touching yourself. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it was just me stroking for 15 minutes a day. And even if I started to feel a little bit, I just stopped after 15 minutes. And it was, what was happening was I was just literally like retraining my body to feel calm, to feel safe. Women do not, there's not, we're labeled with female sexual dysfunction when really we don't feel safe in our bodies because we've probably experienced something when we were young that we didn't talk about and it is stored there. We do not feel safe in our bodies. Mm-hmm. So I committed to, you know, what I didn't realize, what I was committing to with the research was letting myself feel safe in my body again. And that's something no therapist, no partner, no lover could do for me. I had to do it for myself.
So you told me you did, well, you told me in the book when I read, you did positive affirmations while you did this stroking. Can you tell us what you said to yourself?
I just remember, you know, saying thank you. I remember saying I love you. I remember, you know, appreciating my body. And at the time, I didn't believe any of it. But I also realized that all the negative things I'd been saying to myself all those years hadn't worked either. So I thought I might change something else. I was truly taking myself on as a research project at that point. Because really, even though I had a, you know, beautiful family, I was happily divorced, beautiful family, but I didn't feel good in my body. And I, as my daughter especially was coming of age, I thought, what am I modeling to her?
Yeah, because you knew on a level you were unfulfilled physically.
Yeah. But I also thought the problem was me. And actually, when I started this research, I did not remember that instance of being molested when I was 6 that came later.
Wow.
So part of this is like, you know, the memories are so buried. And I also never expected to write a book about all this. I mean, I was very like quietly doing the research, very ashamed. You know, I'd go to New York to do it. I'd go to Austin, Texas. I never did it wherever I was living. And so I did not expect to write a book about it.
Now, when you stroked yourself, did you do fantasies? Because I find to come, I have to have a fantasy. Or was this like, no, I'm going to see if I can come without one?
You know what? It's what works for you. And it's interesting. I write about this in the next book. This whole time, I've never thought of anybody. I just am so present with this sensation. And I think it was because for so long, my mind would wander. And so I was really, when you're only focus is on what feels good and can I do anything to make it feel better. So that was with every stroke, does this feel good? And is there anything I can make it to do to feel better? So I didn't have time to fantasize about an attractive man or an ex-boyfriend or somebody I wanted for the future. So I don't, but that's just what worked for me. It's just like, there's no rules.
But in a way, like if you do make yourself come, then you're actually not doing it right, because what we're trying to do with this 15 minute a day is just to see where it takes us.
Exactly.
And heal.
Yeah.
So if I made myself come doing it, then it'd be like, well, actually, that's not the point, is
it? Right, yeah.
The point is to, because I told you I tried the stroking and these kind of quite extraordinary bad feelings came up.
Yeah, and that's typical, especially if anybody has experienced abuse earlier in their life that maybe they haven't healed. I mean, definitely at the beginning, bad feelings were coming up, but I just kept doing it because once again, I thought I was born into this body as a woman and I have, you know, everybody else is talking about orgasm and I'm like, didn't want to fake it anymore. And even if I couldn't ever feel it, I just wanted to try. I'd been successful at so many other things. So I thought maybe I might be good at this too.
Now, you also admit in the book that you were 36 when you had your first orgasm, but then you didn't allow yourself to enjoy it again.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it was me feeling still unsafe in my body because, and I write about that in the new book too,
because there's a part of letting go in having an orgasm,
yeah,
and that's,
well, and that was the thing. I mean, literally that time it caught me off guard because I was asleep and the man that I was with, you know, just woke me up gently, and essentially the next time I was with him, my body just froze up. Like, we were having a beautiful time and then I just froze, and you know, because my central nervous system thought always goes into fight or flight until I was really able to heal myself. And that wasn't 30 days of stroking myself for 15 minutes. That was, you know, committing to a longer term of what can I do to calm my central nervous system on a daily basis that goes beyond my genitals. It goes, you know, it's about, I have 24,000 breaths a day. So how deep am I going to breathe into them? We are chronic under breathers. Same thing with thoughts. We have, you know, 70 to 80,000 thoughts a day. I'm paying attention to what I'm thinking, and I'm retraining myself to start feel good in my body, and in the end it made me start feel good in life too.
Yeah, because you, at the back of the book, it's really good because there's a kind of long list of all the people that helped you along the way. And can you tell us about Cora?
Is it Koya?
Koya. Can you tell us about your journey in that and how that helped change your life?
Well, it was interesting because I was working with all these, you know, sex experts, and yet it was this movement class that really tuned me into my body more than any working with any of the sex experts, because with Koya, it's the idea is to focus on what feels good in your body and then do anything you can do to make it feel better. So unlike a traditional dance or yoga class where you're following the instructor, in Koya, you're listening less to the instructor and more to yourself. And what I love about it is if you and I were to do a class a day, I might come into class having had a really great morning and you might have come in and having not so good morning. So you would dance with whatever you're feeling right then. And it's really a way to just be authentic of what's going on in your body right now. And yeah, so with Koya, it really made me tune into my body, but also tuned into my own intuition. I started listening. You know, we talk about trusting our gut. Koya was the way that I was really able to trust my gut because I had to listen to my body. And for years, I'd been listening to my head and to the experts and to my mother who dreamed of another life for me and, you know, to all these other people. And I finally started listening to myself.
So amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really impressed. Tell you what I was fascinated by in the book, the yoni massage. and I'm wondering whether they do them in London, actually. Can you tell us about yoni massage and what that is?
Yeah, so yoni massage is a term for therapists who focus on massaging your vagina. You would have to be so careful because there are therapists who say they're yoni massage therapists. They've had no training. If you, some people do it to feel more pleasure in their bodies because they're already in a, orgasmic state and they want to feel their orgasm more. some people who've experienced trauma might not feel anything the first time, and that was definitely
That's
me.
What happened to you.
Yeah. And it was interesting. After that happened, I had so many people calling me saying, who's the best person? And, you know, everybody was like spending a lot of money. We were paying, you know, well over 500 pounds for someone
wow.
to, yeah.
Wow.
So, but like, that's how desperate I was. And yet I thought, just like, I don't want to count on a therapist or a doctor to, be the one
to rely on.
Yeah. To rely on.
Yeah.
I wanted, you know, women to know their own bodies. So part of my research for the next book, Beyond O, was, you know, part of those daily bliss sections was me being my own yoni massage therapist. So
wow.
like really knowing the inside of your vagina, just like we would go get a, you know our back or how things are hurting.
Yeah.
So it was like really knowing the inside of my vagina.
So tell
and
me
cervix.
What you do.
Well,
or
I
do
would,
in
yeah.
your bliss moment.
You know, part of it is I usually would start every morning, and usually every evening too, with giving myself a self massage. So it's just gently massaging every area of your body, but in a way that you were like soothing a baby, because what we don't need is like really deep, intense massages. Mm. We want to calm our central nervous system. Mm.
It's, love, light
yeah,
love.
Yeah. yeah, it's almost like I was just in Zimbabwe, and you'll see animals in the wild when they're hurt, and even our family dogs when they're hurt.
Yep.
They know to retreat, rest, and they'll literally like
lick
their
each
wounds.
Other, yeah.
So what I would do every day is just like slowly massage my body, just putting on one song and for four or 5 minutes. And this, I feel, if I could tell you to do one thing, that would be it.
Okay.
Just to slowly massage your body at morning.
What cream or oil did you use?
Nothing. I would just use my hands because I just really just want to gently, you know, feel every stroke. And
what sort of song are you listening to?
You know what? It's interesting because I will just put it on, I'll put my music on shuffle and just see what comes up.
Oh, so in a way that's like, that might be the mood you're in when it, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's interesting because even on the mornings that I maybe don't think I have time, I'll wake up and literally my body is going into the self-massage.
Wants it. Yeah.
yeah. So, and the other thing about our bodies is our bodies are 70% water, and water holds intention. And so as I'm doing those massages, I'm either saying thank you or I love you. And even if I'm not feeling like that at that moment, you really are sending that intention to your body. And it's very, very healing.
Mm.
Yeah, so
tell me what else you do in your 45 minutes. That's only 5 minutes.
Yeah, I know. So then I would like slowly let my hands travel down to my genitals and maybe trace circles around the outer lips, just feeling, you know, what that feels like. And it's interesting, one of the things that I love that, you know, it had never happened to me before is just like slowly pulling apart the lips. Like that to me kind of lights up my whole body.
Wow.
But just something really slow, just to feel that slow opening.
And like a rose.
Exactly. Like just really, so that was one of those things when I slowed down enough to pay attention. And I hadn't been with a lover that ever slowly did that.
No, they're all desperate.
They're just like, they're just wanting to, yeah. But also, you know, in porn or, you know, we're not, or in sex, you know, in the media, we're not seeing those,
no,
you know,
seeing sort of, bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, yeah. That's their, yeah.
The male.
Exactly.
Patheticness.
Yeah. So then when I'm doing the internal massage, I would just put the, like, up to my first knuckle inside my vagina, and I would just press at the top, and then I just slowly go around like in a clockwise circle, just press and see what I feel. So it's not any rubbing or anything. And what's interesting, because we hold trauma and tension and within our vaginas, and if we've given birth too, we even hold, you know, tension from birth. So it's just like pressing all the way around, and then I move in another knuckle, and I do it again. I move in another knuckle, I do it again. And then when I get to
seeing how big a fingers are.
And then when I get to my cervix, I'm always like, thank you, cervix, for letting in, you know, those sperm for my 4 children who I love, and then keeping all the other ones out. Like, I really like honor my cervix as being this like best bodyguard ever. But, you know, even, you know, it made me think about when I've done this, I even thought about, you know, after I gave birth to my children, it, you know, all of a sudden it becomes all about the baby, and we've just given birth.
Yeah.
And And literally, I wanted to go back to my, you know, cervix, my vagina, my uterus, and say thank you, because it's just done this amazing work.
Especially as you've had 5 children.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for remembering. Yeah, so there was definitely, at first, a lot of grief, and I felt death within my cervix, because my last child that came through had died. And
yes, so that was a sad, even sad, that very sad place for you then.
Yeah, yeah. Very. I mean, it definitely represented grief and death, and definitely... I just felt like there was, you know, I just shut down.
Yes, and I can see that.
Yeah, and it took...
You shut down everywhere, and that was the first place. It's so funny, because when you do yoga, they always say, oh, you hold a lot of tension in your hips.
Yeah.
But they don't mean that. They're actually talking about between your hips, aren't they?
The other interesting thing I found, especially with these massages that I, you know, started doing 3 years ago, and...
Which one? The yoni?
I hadn't just started them 3 years ago, but they were part of the self-massages. I started focusing on my throat because, I don't know, my hands were just guided to my throat. So I would really like spend time looking for the place, you know, the touch that would feel good. And oddly enough, I could start feeling like fluttering in my vagina as I was rubbing my throat. And we forget this connection when we don't speak up. You know, after that first time when I was molested in my bedroom, I started getting severe sore throats and strep throats for the next 40 years of my life. And I have never, since I've done this work, I've never had a sore throat since. And
So there is a link, I know, in yoga between the two points of your throat and your kundalini, whatever it's called.
Yeah. So, you know, we can send everybody to go see these yoni therapists. However,
we can do it ourselves.
We can do it ourselves.
But we've got to give the positive message of ourselves. I think that's the most important thing that we've got to do to really love ourselves.
And I came from such a, you know, really wounded place. And I am now living in such a, you know, loved, healed body that can't imagine, you know, I have now... I don't even like to focus on orgasm climax. It's like I have sessions where I can go 1-2 hours, like as long as I want. But more importantly is this sensual energy. It goes beyond sex. It goes beyond orgasm.
It's life force.
Exactly. And when we cut ourselves off from our life force, we cut ourselves off from a big part of ourselves.
So actually what you've done is you've got in touch with your life force. It's a kind of, it's a spiritual soul thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And you've integrated your mind, body and spirit, which is exactly what, you know, we spend our lives trying to do, rushing around to yoga, you know, going on well-being things, you know, but you literally through self-touch and acceptance and love.
Yeah. And the key thing is we're always looking for the next course to take or book to read to give us that. And when it's really, you know, is ourself. And women always write to me and say, what are the first, you know, 10 things I can do?
Yeah.
And it's like, just like I was pulled to Koya, it's like, pay attention to what you're pulled to. It might be a dance class. It might be painting. It might be something. I always ask women, what did you want to be when you were 8 years old? Because there seems to be a tie-in to what they are or are not doing now. So,
well, I was standing on the desk at school singing to everybody, and that's what I really am. I'm a singer.
And how much do you sing right now?
Well, I'm singing once a week, so I mean only in a class, but it's like I'm at least I'm there, you know what I mean? That's a great step because I haven't sung for 9 years. But I think the key thing that you've said today is that it's go with the feeling that's good. Can you expand on that?
Well, once again, when you see children playing on playgrounds, you would never see them do 10 things that feel bad. They're always going to the movements that feel good. And as women, we start to become conditioned in our body of doing movements that don't feel good and then kind of a life that doesn't feel good because we're told, oh, don't do that or don't walk like that or don't dance like that. And we start to take on this conditioning. And that's one thing I love about Koya is it literally starts to liberate your body from all this years of conditioning. And also, you know, with my with the morning sessions of self massage, you know, we wake up in the morning and usually I used to scan my body and pay attention, yes, like what doesn't feel good, my hip doesn't feel good.
Also, you feel your yeah, stomach fat, yeah, is the right, first thing you feel, and you think, yeah, how flat's my stomach, yeah, or how fat's my stomach, yeah, it's the first thing I think every day.
Exactly. And now I wake up every morning and I just, you know, focus on what feels good. And it might not be much, you know, at first. Or at first it was nothing. Like I couldn't, nothing felt good. But I just, you know, because I'd retrained my body to focus on what didn't feel good, I knew I could retrain it to focus on what felt good. And that's what you see babies do in the morning when they're waking up. They're enjoying their bodies and what stretching and what feels good. And yeah, so it was just like retraining really how, you know, the essence connecting to that, you know, life force of feeling good. We are meant to feel good in our bodies. And as women, we are actually wired to feel good. And when we're disconnected from that, once again, when I talk about orgasm, I'm talking about beyond sex. There is a vitality to what's released during orgasms that is part of like our superpower.
Thank you so much. Autobiography of an Orgasm by Betsy Blankenbaker is out now, and so her other books. You can find more about her on her website, BetsyBlankenbaker.com. Can you spell that out so that people can...
Sure. Betsy, B-E-T-S-Y, Blankenbaker, B-L-A-N-K-E-N-B-A-K-E-R. I always cried when I had to spell that growing up because I'm like, everybody else was done writing their names and I still had to go.
Thank you so much for opening up your heart and your vagina on Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you. I'm glad all your listeners know what it looks like now because you made me describe it.
For more well-being authors and more amazing women, go to radiogorgeous.com.